There are several ways that people submit experiences for this show. And when I say ways, it's usually by email, but they're normally either a full experience or a paragraph or sometimes even a sentence. And I usually just leave them at that and I read out what people send in. On occasion, what they've put in a paragraph, I think, needs a deeper look. And what you're going to hear today for our debut episode of season 25 is exactly one of those. This started as a paragraph sent through to myself maybe a month and a half ago. And over a series of back and forths, it's become the debut episode for season 25. And the reason for that is what you visualize as you are listening. Because when I read through the final completed edition of this episode, what I visualized stayed with me, haunted me. And I don't mean that literally, I mean that just subconsciously in my brain. Pictures would just flash in and make me kind of get a chill, no matter where it was. And although we're in the middle of a heat wave, you can always still be terrified out of your skin. Now, as ever, it's down to you where your level of belief lies. But I, as the person who's interacted with this submitter, fully believe this experience. And so please, the first time in season 25, and the first time on video, lower the lights. Make yourself comfortable, and of course, leave your disbelief at the door, as we hear all about the Holy Demon. Hi, Kev. I've never written in before, but I've listened to every episode, I think, twice. And I think it's finally time I got this experience out onto email and sent to you. I'll try to keep this in order because it happened over years, not weeks or days, which is probably why it took a while for me to see the shape of what was going on. I grew up Catholic. Not just go to church on Christmas and Easter Catholic, as in proper devout Catholic. Mass every Sunday, rosaries in the house, the lot. My mum was the one who kind of held all of that together. My dad left when I was 8, no warning, just disappeared one Tuesday when I was in school. Me and my mother tried to carry on as usual, which we did, until she was diagnosed with cancer around 6 months later. I'd just turned 9 when she died. I remember the priest at her funeral saying she's with God now. And I remember thinking quite clearly for a 9-year-old, well, he didn't do much for her while she was down here, did he? So obviously a 9-year-old cannot live alone in a house, and I was shipped off to live with my auntie after that. She was my mum's sister, and she wasn't a bad woman by any means. And I say that now because what I'm about to tell you may make her sound like an awful human being. But in reality, she just didn't know what to do with a traumatized kid, and back then, in reality, no one did. I started blacking out not long after I moved in with her. And these were serious blackouts. Hours lost. Waking in places with no idea how I got there. I'd be doing something perfectly normal. Homework around the table. Watching TV. And then I'd come round somewhere completely different to where I remembered being. Sometimes it was minutes. Sometimes a chunk of the afternoon would disappear and I'd have no memory of what I'd been doing. Yet, even though I told my auntie, no one took me to see a doctor or a psychiatrist or anything like this. And I tell you this because one morning I woke up and I went down to my auntie's kitchen to make my breakfast. She had a budgie named Kirby. And when I walked through the door, I noticed Kirby's cage door was open. And Kirby was lying on the table, dead. And when I say dead, I mean his head had been twisted the full 180 back with his neck broken. He obviously hadn't done this himself, and the first eyes of suspicion landed on the girl who blacks out and doesn't know what she's been doing. And I understand that as a rational, logical conclusion. However, what I now as an adult realize isn't logical or polite or morally nice is when my auntie said to me, "This is you. You're a curse. You're evil." That was on the day, and in truth, she did apologize later, but the damage to me had already been done. And you see, there's a thing when you're told you're evil, etc., by a family member, by the person who is your caregiver. And although she didn't say, I know it became a fixed idea planted within her. It's like she'd brought it into life, me being this evil person that snaps birds' necks. Now, because of the blackout, I couldn't tell you if I did or didn't, but I truly believe I didn't. However, my auntie had decided I was evil. So I decided to give her evil. As I progressed through my teens, I lent in to evil. I became full goth, the eyeliner, I was reading about the left-hand path, etc. My friend group, we were all kind of into witchcraft and mainly dark things. We would make blood pacts with each other. We would try to do black masses, things you really shouldn't do, especially at that age. Although, at the same time, I'm not ashamed of it either. Because the truth is, it was some armor for a child to be protected. However, when you're a teenager, if somebody says you're the devil, you don't kind of say no, you lean into it. So I gave my auntie who she thought I was, even up to the age of 19 when I finally left. Around that time, I decided maybe this life isn't for me, when my best friend took her own life. Rumors abound that she was into all sorts of major occult blackness, but I don't think that was the case. I just think she had severe depression. But we will never know. Or maybe I will one day, if I go to that place. But I won't if my auntie's keeping the door. However, I did decide to drop all of the darkness, everything except the look. I still look like a goth. If you saw me in the street, you would say, there is a goth. But I dropped all of the worship of the darkness and all of those things which literally I didn't realize at the time had affected me as a person. I felt like I'd dropped a bag of heavy things when I did stop, which was exceptionally strange because I didn't realize I was carrying anything. But when I did stop, I felt lighter. I even considered going back to church. But I decided the church after the God's now helping your mother, and me thinking, why didn't he help her back then? I decided to opt against it. Now, this is where the story actually starts, Kev. So bear with me. I know there was a lot of scenes prior, but this is why it all matters. You see, about 4 years ago, I was walking to work my usual route past St. Bartholomew's, which is the church that I would go to on a particular road. Obviously, that's not the real name of the church, but I'm trying to paint the picture. Now, as I'm walking down the street, I see this old priest that stood outside of the gates of the church, and there's a bus stop opposite these gates. And as he looks like he's heading for the bus stop, he trips and lands really badly, dropping whatever was in his bag, etc. I ran over that street. I surprised myself with how spontaneous my actions were. But he properly went down, as in cut head, etc. So I ran over, I helped him up, I gathered his tins off the pavement. He was mortified. He kept apologizing, insisting that I was a beautiful person for helping him. And when we eventually got him fixed up in a local cafe, he said, "I owe you a cup of tea." Now, in truth, because I've been avoiding church, I thought to myself, well, this is as close as I'll ever get. So yes, I'll sit with this priest, and he seems like a nice guy. And he did. He was excellent company. He was warm, funny, in a dry way. He was easy to talk to. So he suggested we meet there maybe once a month. We would meet and have a lovely few hours once a month in this cafe. Then it became every 2 weeks. And I got to know less and less about him. And that's the peculiar thing. It's always interesting when you look back and realize just how easy it is to not realize something's going on when all somebody has to do is ask you about yourself. Because you'll find they have one hell of a hold over you, and you don't realize just how vain you are in terms of, oh, I'd love to tell you all about myself. It's only in hindsight I realized I asked him maybe 3 questions. But the questions I did ask are part of the reason I'm sending this email. You see, I realized something. However, I'll get to that shortly. I told him everything. I told him all about my best friend, Chrissy, again, not a real name, my mother, my dad, Kirby's broken neck, my auntie saying I was the devil, me deciding to kind of go that way. I even told him about the group of people I hung around with, though I didn't mention the pacts. I thought, this guy's old, he probably hasn't heard sort of someone confessing to taking part in black masses. And who would want to give him that? But as I say, he had this way of saying, go on. That made you feel human. If anything, it felt like the first time any of it had been properly heard by anyone since I was a kid. All the other goth kids had reacted in their own way. They treated my past like it made them and me more interesting, as opposed to something that actually happened to a child. But he listened. It was cathartic, genuinely. But I want to be clear about that because it makes what came after harder to accept, not easier. You see, it's one thing to be frightened by a stranger. It's another when you realize the real fear has been sitting across the table from you all the time. The real fear has been the one person who made you feel heard, less alone. Because somewhere when our meetings started getting into double figures, I began noticing things at the edge of my vision when we would be sitting together. Not shapes of people, but shapes. Shapes that would move. They'd be near the counter, they'd be near the door. As I say, they didn't move like people. They'd just be there, looking solid for a second, and then they'd come apart, like smoke losing its shape. Except quicker. And wronger, if that's a word. Like it hadn't been smoke at all, but something badly pretending to unravel like smoke. I told myself it was the light. Old cafes in the UK have bad lighting. They have patterned wallpaper, especially this cafe. Awful patterned wallpaper that would play tricks with your eyes. Now, it was a good while after these shapes appeared that I noticed the next thing. And once I did, I couldn't stop noticing it. You see, never once had I seen this priest, who did give me his name, but I daren't repeat it, even giving him another name. I just can't bring myself to rename him. I want to leave him nameless for a reason. But never once had I seen him on the church grounds, only outside the gate. He'd wave me off as I would walk past as he'd go to the gate, but I'd never think to watch him go through it. He was always just stood at the gate, never on the church grounds, every single time. Now, this is a very small thing, you could say, and it's really none of my business what he does. But once I noticed it, it sat in me like a stone. So it was one of the questions, I think, as I say, one of the maybe three questions I ever asked him. And I brought it up gently over tea. I tried to make a joke out of it and said something like, "You know, Father, I don't think I've ever actually seen you go into that church, even past the gate. I always just assume you do." And I kind of giggled. He laughed too, and stood, and said something about old habits, and that he liked to make sure I was safe as I walked away. He said he needed the toilet, and I thought, that's a good explanation. He's being caring, he's watching me, making sure I'm safe before entering. That's very gentlemanly of him, and okay, fair enough. So he laughs, walking to the toilet, shaking his head. I smile and think I've been ridiculous, thinking that this poor old priest who's being kind, making sure I'm okay, is now some mysterious person, just because I've had run-ins with things in the past. And I sipped my tea, and I waited. 5 minutes, 10 minutes. And then I got concerned because this was an elderly gentleman. When the 20th minute of him not coming back arrived, I went to check myself. Because by then something in me already knew something was wrong. And I don't mean medically. The staff said, "You can't go in." I asked them to go and check. And they came out and said that there is nobody in there. I said, "Check again." I said, "You did see the priest go in." And even the lady who worked behind the counter said, "Yeah." "I can't explain it. There are no windows in that." So I went back to my chair. I held my tea and I thought maybe he slipped past when I wasn't noticing. The more concerning thought was maybe you blacked out. But I know that wasn't the case because I was looking at my phone, etc. And you had the time on your phone. So I was pretty sure that was not the scenario we were dealing with. Anyway, I leave the cafe. No point being there if he's somehow vanished. I don't see or hear from him for maybe 2 weeks. And then one day I'm walking to work past the church. And I notice him stood outside the gates, looking straight down at the pavement, completely still, like an inanimate mannequin. I was going to just walk past as I was on the other side of the road and not make any sort of eye contact. But guilt, Catholic guilt, kind of got built up inside of me. So I waved. He didn't move. And I thought, well, he's not in my eye line. Everyone else, as you think, has seen me wave. I'm going to wave again. So I did. He didn't notice. I now felt embarrassed as I know at least two people on the street had seen me attempt to get his attention. The third wave, he noticed. Thank God, I thought. At least people now know we know each other. He looked up at me and gave me the biggest smile I think I've ever seen him give since I've known him. And he waved back, perfectly normal, perfectly him. I smiled back. And I looked and smiled as I walked, very carefully, of course, as I'm looking across the road. And about a second later, his entire face changed into some kind of fury I've never seen before on a living person. This wasn't just annoyance or someone who's looking to shout at someone. This was total dark rage, venomously aimed at me. I stopped, and as I'm trying to think about why I could have upset him so, he cocked his head back and spat in my direction. Yeah, a priest. Spat right at me, even though I was luckily across the street. Even so, I think I opened my mouth wide and was just slack-jawed for a moment. Maybe 2.3 seconds later, his face dropped back into the warm smile. And he waved again, like this was some mere interruption, like none of it had happened. I sprinted to the next shop for safety. I was that terrified. And when I came out, he was gone. He wasn't there when I would walk past, but I decided I'm not going to risk it. I didn't want to see him. Who would want to see that? So I started getting a bus to work, which took much longer, and it was much more out the way than my walk, which was kind of straight, just down the road. However, thanks to this priest, I'm now getting on a bus and taking a tour of the area before getting to work each day, something I wasn't very happy with. There's not much you can do about the money you have now, but if you want to do something about the money you could have tomorrow, Acorns wants to help. And with the Acorns Potential screen, you can find out what your money is capable of. Acorns is a smart way to give your money a chance to grow. It's easy. You can sign up in minutes and start automatically investing your spare money, even if all you have is spare change. Because Acorns grows with you. Whether you're just starting out or thinking about settling down, Acorns supports your big and small goals across every life stage. And the Acorns Potential screen shows you the power of compounding and how your money can grow over time. Plus, you can quickly adjust how much you're investing every day, every week, or month to make sure you're building towards your goals. Acorns is an all-in-one. No more finance apps cluttering up your phone. With Acorns, you can invest, save, and give your money a chance to grow in one trusted place. I've had and used many financial applications, but the specific thing about the Acorns app I love is the potential screen. Of all the apps I've used, it gives me such a clear picture of the opportunities for my cash to grow. So sign up now, and Acorns will boost your new account with a $5 bonus investment. Join the over 14 million all-time customers who've already saved and invested over $22 billion with Acorns. Head to acorns.com/darkparanormal or download the Acorns app to get started. Paid non-client endorsement. Compensation provides incentive to positively promote Acorns. T2 compensation provided. Potential subject to various factors such as customers' accounts, age, and investment settings. Does not include Acorns fees. Results do not predict or represent the performance of any Acorns portfolio. Investment results will vary. Investing involves risk. Acorns Advisors LLC, an SEC registered investment advisor. View important disclosures at acorns.com/darkparanormal. However, one day I'm sat on the bus. I'm thinking about something else. But he kept jumping in my mind simply because this was someone I trusted. This was someone I was telling things to. I hadn't told anybody. And I was wondering how he managed to get it out of me. Maybe we just talk when there's silence. I believe that's a thing. However, I noticed something else. Every time I try to remember a point where we'd had a cup of tea together, he seemed different in my head. As if someone was redrawing the same person, slightly different every time. But close enough that you'd still know it was him. However, a slight difference that you just couldn't name or put your finger on. It really got to me, the fact that this guy in my memory couldn't hold a solid image. So one day, as I say, I'm on the bus, I'm trying to force the images and memories of him out of my head completely. I start playing with my phone, and I'm compelled to look up. And when I do, sat directly in front of me, but wearing civilian clothes, is the same face, the same neck, the same skin texture. It's him. It's the old priest. There's one jarring difference, though. His eyes. You see, one of his eyes was blue. Previously, they were both blue. But now one of his eyes was blue. The other was brown. And they didn't look like a person's eyes. They looked like two separate things that had been pushed into some face by mistake. I screamed, and I kind of fighted to get away from this man. I think I hit him accidentally in the process. And then his wife turned round and started trying to attack me, because it turned out this person was a real person. This was not the priest, even though he was the twin of the priest, except for the different coloured eyes. I left that bus so quickly I almost fell down the steps. I went to the doctor shortly after that, because I knew I needed something, but I didn't know what. I didn't tell him everything, of course. I gave him the very vague version. I said I'd been anxious. I'd been seeing things at the edge of my vision. I'd been struggling to sleep. He put me on sertraline, which is a standard response to what I just told him, I guess. The first few weeks on the medication, I felt flat, not better or worse, just level in a way that made me feel blank. There was nothing, and nothing is a strange thing to be frightened of until you're living inside of it. I remember being stood in a shop queue on a perfectly ordinary Tuesday or Wednesday afternoon, a basket's half full. I'm thinking things over in my head, but the things I'm thinking aren't right. I know that now. But as I say, I was ambivalent. I was genuinely thinking, is my life worth anything? I could understand, wrongly, of course, how people could just take their own lives. And as I'm thinking this thought process through in my head, the woman who was directly in front of me in the queue turned round and, out of nowhere, mid-thought, like she'd heard my thought, rather than it being a thing in my head, she turned round and said, "In your case, love, I'd end it. If I was you, I'd just end it. It's best for everyone." She said it in the way you would tell someone, "I'm sorry about your dog's death," or "the milk's gone off." Just information passed along kindly. Then she smiled, she put her hand on mine, and her hand was ice cold. And I don't mean mildly cold or more cold than mine, I mean ice cold. And she turned back to join the queue. But despite my ambivalence, some rage inside me just bubbled to the surface. Probably one emotion out of all of the ones that had been subdued. And I said, "Excuse me, what did you say to me?" And I kind of touched her on the shoulder. She spun round, completely bewildered and scared, as did the entire queue in front and the girl on the till. And she said, "I haven't said anything. Sorry, love." The girl on the till backed her up, saying she didn't say a thing. The woman in front of her said, "Are you okay, love?" No, I wasn't okay. I dropped my shopping on the floor and I ran home and sat on the kitchen floor for the best part of an hour. It was the start of the worst week of my life. I began seeing shadows at the edge of every room, every door frame. They weren't just confined to that cafe anymore. They were in my own reflection. They were stood at the end of my bed at 2 a.m. They were always in the corner of my eye. They were always gone when I turned to try and get a look. But I couldn't go back to the doctor, even though I was thinking, I'm losing my mind. Some part of me knew already by then, this wasn't something that a tablet was ever going to fix. So, in the back of my mind, the answer came forward. And I knew this was going to be the answer. I'd been kind of putting it off in my head. I had to go to the church. However, the only church I knew was the one where this horrific individual worked as a priest. But I thought to myself, I know how churches work. There's a deacon. There are people around the church who work with the priest. He doesn't work alone. He can't act in an evil way to me when he's surrounded by people he knows. So, despite the fact I'd seen him spit at me, etc., I kind of hoped, as some parishes started to do, there was more than one priest. Even though I didn't go to church, so I would have no idea. So I walked to that area where there's the gate and the bus stop. And the gate was on my right, the bus stop was on my left. No one was in the bus stop, I just kind of looked at the church and thought, what am I doing? This is stupid. So I put my hand on the gate and looked at the church. And then just at that moment, I heard a cough from behind me. I turned around, and there's the priest, in his full black and white collar garb, sat in the bus stop, but in a way that a teenager would kind of sit. It rarely was a juxtaposition, considering this guy was at least 75. I started to shake inside, because he was acting in a way of a teenager too, leaning forward and looking left and right, lifting himself up with his hands and swinging. And then he said, "Long time no see." And he sat down and crossed his legs. I could feel my knees starting to buckle. I didn't reply to what he said. I just opened the gate slightly. And he held his hand up and said, "I've just locked up. There's no point going in there now." I paused, and he gave me that smile, that same warm smile from the very first day with the shopping and the trip and the cab. And then he looked at me straight in the eye and said, "Buses are fun, aren't they?" And then he looked away for just a second, just a second, just long enough. And when he looked back at me, his eyes were the same as the man's I'd seen on the bus. One blue, one brown, and wrong in the exact specific way. Like two things that didn't belong in a face, and they knew it. He starts laughing. Not a normal laugh, it was like there were three laughs behind it. I knew I was about to fall, I had to lean on the gate. But you know yourself when a laugh is about to stop. This didn't stop. It was like a circular breathing, but a laughter version. Then, as I think I'm about to pass out, I hear, "Can I help you?" from behind. I turn round and there's a priest stood in the foyer of the church. He's just literally unlocked the door. I stare back to the bus stop and he's gone. I look up and down the road and there's no sign of him. There's no way he could have made it anywhere. He's disappeared again. So I walked very tenderly up to the church. Again, I didn't feel like I could tell this priest everything. I have that in me, but strangely not with the old priest. But I did mention him in passing. I think the priest must have kind of got the gist of what I was saying, based on what I was saying, because he walked into whatever room he went into and came out with a little leather purse. He gave me a Holy Communion. That little rice circle that we used to have in Mass. I hadn't had one since I was a kid. He placed it in my mouth, on my tongue. Then he whispered some kind of prayer, which I didn't hear, nor did I want to. And he put some oil on my head, which I think was a psalm oil or prism oil or something similar. I'm not exactly sure. But I do know one thing. I'm not going to say when I left I felt light, like an angel, like you hear people say, or everything lifted. It didn't. I was still terrified. But I can, hand on heart, say the shadow stopped. I can't say the old priest has disappeared for good, because I simply don't put myself in a situation where I have to go past that church again. However, I'm no longer on sertraline. I'm on no medication at all. I've met a partner. We now live in the same area, but further away from the church. My life's going well, but I thought I'd share this with your listeners after our back and forths, just in case they have anything similar happen to them. And if they do, to let them know, just go to church. Lots of love, Sarah from Chester. Well, Sarah, thank you for being our debut episode for season 25. It's an experience which I now know intimately, thanks to our back and forth conversations that we've had in trying to get this information to become a full debut episode. And strangely, I felt a bit like that old priest that you mentioned, as I know how difficult it was to get certain parts of that experience out of you. But I'm so glad that you did, because as I say, once we finally had everything glued together, the image I've got of that old man is never going to leave me, not once. It always comes up even now, as I think. So thank you for that. I joke, of course. But in all sincerity, the idea of somebody saying at the end of that email, as you did, and we kind of agreed that that was an okay sign off, the go to church, that was your suggestion. But that stands for anyone, I believe, of any religious capacity or not. Not necessarily if you don't believe, go. If you have a belief system, go to that. Because I think belief is the thing that will get you in and out of any trouble. And your sincerity in that belief is the very thing, the very key that will either unlock absolute devastation or absolute freedom from devastation. Belief is the thing which we still don't fully understand. But that infamous saying of, if you think you can and you think you can't, you're right either way, that's a saying for a reason. It's not just a throwaway comment. And it's something that I think applies to hauntings, or should I say, attempted possessions. I think I could argue a case for that in this experience. But I think it's something that is definitely of value here to consider. But Sarah, thank you so much for your openness when we've been communicating and for giving us our debut episode of season 25. Now, season 25 is a very special season for us. It's an obvious kind of anniversary season, a quarter of a century of episodes. When we complete this season, we will have 250 episodes. Now, that's unbelievable. I never believed we'd get to that at all. And what we're actually building, when I think about it, is a catalogue of current-day paranormal events of the darker kind. So, this is the first time we've done video. So if you are watching this on video, and you've not seen the podcast or heard the podcast even before, you can find links to that in the notes below, etc. Or go and search The Dark Paranormal wherever you listen to podcasts and subscribe there. And you will have access to that 240 back catalogue to listen to. I should mention as well, our Patreon team are the guys who allow this to all take place. And they are truly, sincerely, the most wonderful people in terms of a paranormal community anywhere online. That's not hyperbole. Believe me. I started a ghost club at age 6. I'm now 47. So you can see how long I've been into the topic. My point is, when the internet came around, yes, I can remember when that happened too. The first thing I'd done was try to find like-minded people about the paranormal. And without doubt, almost every group I joined let me down in some way. Not personally, I mean in how they interacted. There was always ever a need for hierarchy, fighting between moderators, all this nonsense, people claiming to be experts in the paranormal. And that's the first sign that you need to back away. When someone says, I know everything about the paranormal, you really want to wish or hope that they mean the historical events that are classed as paranormal that have taken place in the past, not I know how demons act. If anyone says anything like that, personally, I would say turn the other way and find somewhere else. And this Patreon group is just like that. Now, when you join our Patreon, not only do you support this and everything we're trying to do, you also get early ad-free access to each episode of The Dark Paranormal and our mini-sodes and Dark Realms episodes, which are coming out soon. You also get, dependent on the tier, access to 2 Patreon-only episodes each and every week of the year. That's 52 times a year, so 104 episodes a year. And most shows say, once a month we're going to give you this, we're going to give you that. No, this is every week, 2 episodes just for Patreons. One is named Dark Bites, where we take a look at the shorter experiences that we receive that don't make a full episode, and we put them together for one episode. And another is called After Dark. And After Dark is a video episode where we talk, or should I say, I talk, and show our Patreons my thought process when I'm looking at an episode. So I literally press record. There's no editing. It's 30 minutes of me just talking to a camera. And sometimes there's a lot of silence as I try to work out different theories in my head. And our Patreons then come back and say, either I disagree or I agree. It's just a wonderful community. And if you'd like to join that, you can also support the show in doing so That's also in the below. As is the place to send your experiences, which is the website, thedarkparanormal.com/submit-your-experience. And yes, I did nearly forget that. But right now, I just want to say a huge thank you to everyone for your patience, because yes, this was due out on Friday. Many issues, many demons in the machine. I'm not even sure if that's a joke. And sincerely, thank you. It's been a big effort to get this out, and our team have done a sterling job. So I want to thank them too. But for our first video episode, and of course, if you're listening on audio, please don't feel left out. You can find this video on YouTube. But if you are watching on YouTube, I would go and listen on Spotify or Apple Podcasts and get access to that 240 episodes. Why not? If you enjoyed the paranormal, I certainly would. But until next time for episode 2, I want you all to stay safe, take care, and remember, if you're ever discussing the paranormal, always leave some of your disbelief at the door. And I'll speak to you next week for episode 2 of season 25 of The Dark Paranormal.